from Edinburgh, Radio Napier, News.
Good afternoon, my name is Kieran Scott. You're listening to Radio Napier and here are today's headlines. MPs will vote on triggering Article 50 today after an extensive debate in the House of Commons last night. A new report has warned that Britain may face a major slowdown in living standards. In sports, Celtic have managed to retain the services of key stars Moussa Dembele and Kieran Tierney. And we'll be presenting a sneak peek at this year's upcoming craft beer festival. But first, tonight at Westminster, MPs will vote on a bill that will allow Britain's exit from the European Union to go forward. As many as 100 MPs will vote against it, mainly from the SNP and Labour Party. As well as rejecting it, the SNP will put forward 50 amendments that they wish to be made to the bill. Jessica Mercer has more.
Tonight in Westminster, MPs will vote on a bill that will set the wheels in motion for Britain's exit from the EU. The majority of MPs are expected to approve the bill, as David Davis explained in the House of Commons yesterday.
It's not a bill about whether the UK should leave the European Union, or indeed how it should do so. It is simply about Parliament empowering the government to implement a decision already made, a point of no return already passed. We asked the people of the UK if they wanted to leave the European Union. They decided they did.
Up to 100 MPs are expected to vote against the bill, the majority of them being from Labour and SNP. However, Conservative MP Ken Clark will also attempt to block the bill, as there was a chuckle in the House of Commons when he compared Brexit to Alice in Wonderland.
Apparently you follow the rabbit down the hole and you emerge in a wonderland where suddenly countries throughout the world are queuing up to give us trading advantages and access to their markets.
As well as blocking the bill, the SNP has put forward 50 amendments to the Article 50 bill in what Ruth Davidson called an attempt to hold the UK to ransom. The SNP have been accused of using the Brexit bill to hold another independence referendum.
I said that I would exhaust all options, and that's what I will do. But we're going to have to see some give from the UK government.
We spoke to Douglas Ross, Conservative MP for Scotland, who made the party's stance on a second referendum clear.
So why do you think the debate on Scottish independence has been reignited recently?
Well, it's only been reignited because the Scottish National Party haven't held to their promise that the independence referendum would be a once-in-a-generation event. And they are now using any opportunity, including Brexit, to bring this question back. What other issues are going to come forward? It seems everything that the SNP can use to stir up more discussion and debate about independence they will use.
And the vote on Article 50 today is expected to be blocked by Scotland. And what is your stance on this?
Well, it's going to be blocked by Scotland's the majority of Scotland's MPs, and that's what they're entitled to do in terms of representing their constituents. I come from Moray, a constituency that came closer than anywhere else in Scotland to voting no. So Angus Robertson, the local MP and leader of the SNP, has to consider why his constituency was so divided on this issue.
Do you think that independence is still possible or a viable idea?
Well, I've never thought independence was a viable idea, and I really think Nicola Sturgeon, her ministers and MSPs should focus on the main job, which is governing Scotland, rather than their own party political agenda to separate Scotland from the rest of the United Kingdom.
The vote is set to be cast tonight by MPs and, if successful, will allow Theresa May to trigger Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty as Britain begins its exit from the EU.
On Monday, over 3,000 people took part in Scotland Against Trump's protest against the government's invitation to Donald Trump for a state visit later this year, prompted by his decision to ban refugees from certain Muslim countries. We spoke to Michael Gray, a reporter from The National, who explained why he thinks Scots took the streets.
I think there was an incredible amount of sort of rage and anger, especially in Edinburgh, around what's been happening in politics, both with the Brexit vote in the UK and Trump's narrow victory in America, and specifically the range of issues that Trump's presidency represents, with opposition to women's rights, to LGBT rights, to the rights of Muslim and migrant communities, to disability groups. I think generally a presidency that signals a worrying descent away from human rights, and that's something that obviously united a lot of people in opposition in Edinburgh on that night, and not only in Edinburgh, but across Scotland, across the UK, and in the global protests we've seen in opposition to his election.
We asked Trump supporters via Twitter and Facebook what they thought about the newly elect and the protests happening against him in Scotland. Ian Lennox from Clydebank on Facebook says, "I think it's an absolute disgrace. The man has elected by the people of the USA, and that should be respected." Callum Rob from Inverness on Twitter states, "As repulsive as he is, the government can't really go back on an invite to a head of state, but the invite itself was premature." We spoke to UKIP Scotland leader David Coburn on whether he supported Trump's UK visit.
Well, I think it's a good idea to come to the UK. I think it's excellent because he's half Scottish, which is good for us. He's going a different way from previous American presidents, which makes him more interesting than most. It looks as if he's going to try and make the American economy take off. And that's good for Scotland. We need jobs. We need investment. He's invested a great deal of money in Scotland before, which is a good thing. During the debates on television, I was the only one of the Scottish leaders who welcomed Trump. All the rest of them had unpleasant things to say about him.
Living standards are expected to fall in Britain, with a number of families seeing no income growth before the next general election. Research conducted by the Resolution Foundation has stated that poorer families will see a dip in their incomes, which could rise to the largest brunt of inequality since Margaret Thatcher's days at the helm. A think tank has mentioned that these alarming statistics stem from a mini-boom in living standards, which halted because of rising inflation and a lull of employment in recent months. It is expected that a typical household's income growth will fall approximately by 1.2% this year, which could further deteriorate by the end of this current parliament. Victoria Sherbakova has more.
The average UK household is facing a standstill in living standards as Britons are seeing no growth in their income, a recent report says. A report published by Research Resolution says that families in Britain will see a decrease in their income. This will bring the highest inequality in the United Kingdom since the days of Margaret Thatcher. A typical household is predicted to lose 1.2% in their income until the next general election, although a fifth of the richest households will see an increase of almost 5% in the next 4 years. Living Wage Foundation Director Catherine Chapman explained how this is going to affect people's day-to-day life.
I think what today's report from the Resolution Foundation really shows is that it is painting a pretty bleak picture for working families in 2017. And what particularly stands out about the report is it shows that there will be that real squeeze on living standards for low-income families who are in work. And we know that this can, you know, this makes a difference of being able to worry about paying bills at the end of the month.
Stephen Clark, economic analyst at the Resolution Foundation, points out the key reasons for falling income growth.
Household incomes has been rising quite quickly. Unfortunately, our report shows that this year and in the near future, living standards are going to slow, so the growth in income is going to slow. And this is primarily due to inflation rising and the big gains that we've seen in employment in the last couple of years starting to plateau off.
Report also suggests that Conservative Party's austerity policies on tax and benefits are other contributing factors to the rise of inequality. Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell said that this report is showing the unfair economic policies of Philip Hammond, with the poor getting poorer and the rich getting richer.
I'm joined by Bruce Watt, who's going to give us an update on today's local stories. Bruce?
Thanks, Kieran. An investigation into the deaths of six dogs in Fourth Quarter Park in the Granton area of Edinburgh has found no evidence connecting the animals' deaths to the park. Concerns were raised when six animals had to be put down after being walked in the park, which sits next to a former gasworks. A spokesperson for Edinburgh Council stated that they'd found no evidence linking the deaths to the park. Earlier today, we spoke to a local dog walker at Fourth Quarter Park.
I'm not worried about it, no. It's I've been coming down here three or four times a day with him. When I go down Gypsy Bray, I pass through the park, let him off his leash and that. But I just keep him on the leash when I go past the water and down by Kem when I come up that way.
Edinburgh's Cable Wind House has been awarded a Category A listing status by Historic Environment Scotland. The carved building, affectionately known as the Banana Flats, was built in the 1960s. The Category A listing will grant the building status as one of the national and international importance. And finally, in local news, the organisers of Tea in the Park have announced that their new festival, Transmit, will not be replacing the long-running Scottish festival. CEO of DAF Concerts, Jeff Ellis, has stated that he has no intentions to replace Tea in the Park, hoping that in the future both festivals will be able to operate concurrently. That's today's local roundup. Back to you, Kieran.
Thanks, Bruce. Rail campaigners are welcoming a scheme aimed at making train fares across Britain fairer. The trial on selected routes from May should make it easier for passengers to find the cheapest tickets. Currently, some return fares can work out hundreds of pounds, more than two singles for the same journey. Mike Hewitson from the watchdog Transport Focus says the trial is long overdue.
We've been calling for things like single leg pricing, you know, that sort of mix and match approach for years now. We've been pointing out that split ticketing has been the elephant in the room. People who know the right questions can get a cheaper fare. People who don't know the right questions get a more expensive one. You can't justify that.
Train companies claim that they have been prevented from being more flexible in offering tickets that passengers want because of government rules covering rare fares. Andy Wakeford, head of fares and retailing at the Rail Delivery Group, which represents the 23 train operating companies in Britain, hopes the scheme will continue to help travellers in the future.
This is not the be-all and end-all, but it's the start point for a lot of things that we want to do to address issues that we know customers want, that we know everyone's keen to see happen.
And here is Adam Sturrock with today's international news.
President Donald Trump has announced his nominee for the US Supreme Court. Colorado Federal Appeals Court Judge Neil Gorsuch is expected to restore the Supreme Court's conservative majority, swaying major decisions for potential years to come on issues such as gun rights, gay marriage, and abortions. Mr. Gorsuch said that he was honored to accept.
When we judges don our robes, it doesn't make us any smarter, but it does serve as a reminder of what's expected of us. Impartiality and independence, collegiality and courage. I consider the United States Senate the greatest deliberative body in the world.
The highest court in the United States has been missing a member after Antonin Scalia died at the age of 79 last year. President Trump's nomination has been criticized by Democrats because Barack Obama originally put forward a replacement that was quickly rejected by the Republican Senate due to it being the incumbent's final year. The Democratic Senate leader, Chuck Schumer, has said his party will oppose any nominations by President Trump if they aren't good enough, he said.
We are not going to settle on a Supreme Court nominee. If they don't appoint someone who's really good, we're going to oppose them tooth and nail.
France's National Front leader, Marine Le Pen, has failed to meet the deadline for repaying funds to the European Parliament. The presidential candidate, who is also a member of the European Parliament, had until midnight to pay back 300,000 euros that the European Parliament says she had misspent. In response, the Parliament may withhold some of her wages. Le Pen is one of the front runners in the French presidential elections in April and May. A billionaire with links to China's president has been abducted from his hotel room in Hong Kong. Zhao Xianhua has been missing since Friday, but according to an anonymous source, he's been taken into mainland China. The Chinese-born businessman controls a number of shares in banks, insurance companies, coal and property companies through his Tomorrow Group. The reason as to why he's been transported away from Hong Kong is unclear. Supertanker planes for the United States, Russia and Brazil have been deployed to fight forest fires in Chile. A state of emergency has been declared in a vast area south of the capital, Santiago, with a total death count reported to be around 11 people. A resident of Minghe says these events aren't new.
We have already gone through another experience. We didn't evacuate anything. Everything here was burnt. There was nothing left in the town. When was that? 1996, 97. So we're not shocked by this. We're going to wait until the end.
The Scottish Government has announced plans to help the country's horticulture by planting over 10 million trees in the next 8 years. The aim is to put the country's annual tree planting target well beyond any other country in the UK, with 10,000 hectares per year the current target. Fabiana Cacaccia has more.
Comfort, the leading UK trade body for forestry and timber, has praised the Scottish Government's announcement that it would raise its annual target from around 22 million trees to 33 million trees by 2025, to deliver jobs and investment to rural communities and to help meet its climate change mitigation targets. We spoke to Andrew Heald, Technical Director of Comfort, who explains why there is a need for a raise in the number of tree planting in the UK.
We also have one of the lowest forestry covers, lowest forestry and woodland cover in Europe. So the average woodland cover across Europe is about 36%. So about a third of the land is covered in forest and trees. Whereas in the UK as a whole, it's only about 11 or 12%. In Scotland, it's a little bit higher at 18%.
We also asked if this new plan in Scotland is going to affect the rest of the UK.
The Scottish Government has really kind of understood, I think, the value of well-managed sustainable forestry that it can deliver for timber it can deliver for jobs and employment.
According to Andrew, the Scottish Government will be able to hit its target and the rest of the UK will have to up its game.
I think Scotland is doing, in simple terms, Scotland is doing better than England because it's got stronger targets and it's more clearly addressing some of the challenges.
Thanks, Fabiana. And here with today's sports stories is Robbie Thompson.
Thanks.
Celtic have kept hold of star players Moussa Dembele and Kieran Tierney, despite speculation that the pair linking the pair with a move to the English Premier League. Fullback Tierney has reportedly been subject to interest from relegation strugglers Sunderland, although no bid was made for the 19-year-old. Dembele had flown to London yesterday for a scan on his knee, fueling rumours that he was potentially set for a big money move to Chelsea. Dembele arrived at Celtic Park in the summer and has scored 20 goals so far this term, including 5 in 3 appearances against Rangers. Defender Efe Ambrose, meanwhile, completed a loan move to Blackburn Rovers until the end of the season. Celtic host Aberdeen at Parkhead tonight while Rangers travel to Hearts. Brendan Rodgers expressed admiration for tonight's opponents.
Aberdeen's a fantastic club. You know, haven't been
no idea what
there and know the great history of what they have. My focus has primarily been on ourselves, but and even though we've played them 3 times and won 3 times, they've all been tough games in different ways.
Thanks, Kieran. Apologies for that there. Moving to last night's Premier League action, and Liverpool missed the opportunity to close the gap at the top of the Premier League table after a 1-1 draw with Chelsea in front of a rousing support at Anfield. David Luiz put Antonio Conte's men in front midway through the first half with a thundering free kick that left goalkeeper Simon Mignolet at sixes and sevens. Jorginho Wijnaldum headed home an equaliser for the home side before a Diego Costa penalty was saved 15 minutes from time. Post-match, the Chelsea manager said that he was pleased with a point.
A good point, for sure. Yeah, when you have a good chance of penalty at the 76 minutes, you think that you could win.
From the round ball to the oval, Scotland begin their Six Nations campaign against Ireland on Saturday afternoon at Murrayfield, with the final squads being announced tomorrow. Ireland were dealt a blow after an injury to Johnny Sexton ruled him out of the clash. Scotland's only notable absentee is prop WP Nell, who has recently undergone surgery on a neck injury. Scotland captain Greg Laidlaw expressed confidence in the build-up to the game.
It's been one of the great things about coming into camp, and the Glasgow boys coming off the back of an incredible victory that they thoroughly deserved, and so they're bringing real confidence and excitement into the squad, and same with the Edinburgh boys as well. They've qualified for the quarters in the Challenge Cup again, and beating Harlequins twice, who are a good team and good strong side in the Premiership, so, and rightly so, they're coming in with confidence also, so that's been great. We've got a real good feeling within the group.
Thanks, Robbie. If you're into your craft beer and from Edinburgh, then today's announcement will tingle your taste buds. Edinburgh will host Scotland's first global craft beer festival, where 30 internationally acclaimed brewers will travel from around the globe to exhibit their fine selection of alcoholic beverages and Leaf. Douglas Greenwood has been talking to people involved to find out more.
Craft beer. It's the drinking trend taking Scotland and the world by storm. Almost every bar you visit now caters to this newfound audience, who enjoy everything from a carefully crafted IPA to dark and mysterious stouts. Thousands of fans will have the opportunity to sample the best craft the world has to offer in Edinburgh's biggest craft beer festival to date, with breweries from Newcastle to New Zealand making an appearance. David Moore, the CEO of craft beer subscription service Flavourly, said it was the search for quality that caused the craft beer trend to continue to grow.
Post-global financial crisis, I think consumers are rejecting big corporate, they're rejecting big government, and they're looking for smaller brands that have a story based on people, the people that made them, provenance, the ingredients and the contents, and place, i.e. where they come from.
Dominique DeRolo, a manager at Edinburgh's Blackbird Bar, has said that by simply stocking the brews, visitors were more inclined to give them a try.
I think because we stock it, then it's more accessible to people because we have it in our fridges, so it's obvious that it's there, so people are more likely to ask questions about it.
Despite the new craft audience, she said that the bar wouldn't feel the effects of the festival as it's happening down in Leith, some distance from the bar's Toll Cross location.
I wouldn't really say it would draw more people in up here just because it's so far away, because obviously the Biscuit Factory is down in Leith and we're all the way up in Toll Cross. So, I mean, all I would say is a benefit from it is it makes people more aware that there are so many different types of craft beers.
Nevertheless, Christina Ross of the Biscuit Factory, where the event will be held, couldn't be more excited to welcome the fans.
I am so excited for the Craft Beer Festival to come to the Biscuit Factory because it's an event that's actually going to be quite different to what we usually get here.
The cost of a ticket will provide punters with limited edition beer glasses and unlimited samples from the breweries on offer. Whether you're a dedicated craft fan or you're just looking to try something new, the event takes place in May and is sure to be a sellout.
Thanks, Douglas. That's all for this afternoon. You can read more news on en4news.com or follow us at en4news2016. We hope you have a great afternoon.
This is Radio Napier.